This podcast is brought to you by the University of Pretoria, a world of answers.
The fourth industrial revolution has been the buzzword in recent times. But have we thought about how it will impact lives in South Africa, especially when it comes to our healthcare system? Are we ready for it, and do we have the capacity to deal with some of the challenges it could bring us? Helping me to make sense of this is Professor in the Department of Physiology at the University of Pretoria, Professor Annie Joubert. I'm Aubrey Masango, and you're listening to A World of Answers. Professor Annie Joubert, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate your time.
Many thanks for the opportunity to participate in the discussions.
So indeed, the phrase, the fourth industrial revolution, has been on a lot of people's tongues lately. What is it?
So it is characterized by intercalating technologies across the physical, digital, and biological systems. So that means that the fourth industrial revolution includes new technologies that are currently developing with exponential velocity, breadth, and depth, and it's transformed medicine and health. So it means that if we think from the start of antibiotics being used in the 1900s, and we're now in the fourth industrial revolution, it implies using genetic engineering, using nanotechnology, data science, artificial intelligence, and also three-dimensional printing in health, together with robotics used in surgery.
So obviously, this is a very revolutionary advancement in human beings' ability to deal with the things that we need to deal with. I suppose that's what the industrial revolution mantra is all about. It's about our ability as human beings to advance in various forms of technology to be able to manipulate the world to our advantage. And in this particular case, we're talking about medicine.
Yes.
Talk to me specifically about the medical field and how the fourth industrial revolution and its various technologies is going to do precisely that.
So if we can start perhaps with the genetic engineering. So that includes manipulation of genetic material and, for example, gene therapy. And that will provide a patient of a functional copy when there is a detective gene causing this specific genetic disease. Gene editing is of importance. That will lead to making precise additions or deletions within the genetic material according to remove the negative effect. And up to now, and according to the research being done, is there are about 10,000 human diseases due to genetic mutations. And one example of a rather newly developed technology is the CRISPR-Cas9 gene technology. That there is currently a trial that has been approved by the Food and Drug Administration that protects public health. And this specific gene editing technology, in the one that I have now read about, is to elevate the hemoglobin in patients suffering from thalassemia. And that is, for example, a protein that or a pigment that carries the oxygen in erythrocytes, our red blood cells. And if that can be corrected, then that will then also address this specific disease where the hemoglobin is not functional in the patient. Then there is also the nanotechnology. And nanotechnology is application in the medicine being developed so that nanoparticles can deliver specific drugs to certain cancer cells. That will minimize the effect of the side effects of chemotherapeutic drugs. Artificial intelligence is another part of the fourth industrial revolution. And in this sense, it produces medical diagnosis from an X-ray faster than a radiologist with a pinpoint of accuracy. So how it works is that the medical imaging data and the clinical risk factors will be linked together, and that will then generate a unique radiation dose for this specific patient. And it actually links them to precision medicine that is nowadays so important in the treatment of a patient, because it's not the case that one size fits all in treatment of diseases. And maybe if I can provide an example of where artificial intelligence played a role, is that there is a specific patient, and she was actually a researcher in artificial intelligence overseas. And she was unfortunately diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 43. And having the background as a researcher in artificial intelligence, she used the data, the reports that on her specific, the medical reports, the diagnostic images, and she adapted that according to the artificial intelligence models. And that assisted the clinicians in helping her and treating her specific disease. Everything part of the fourth industrial revolution. And then the 3D printing, and my colleague Prof. Mashudu is going to then further elaborate on that, but maybe from the cancer side. 3D printing is very important in health. And the reason why I say that is in vitro work, that means the laboratory work that we're currently doing, cannot directly be extrapolated to the patient per se. There are lots of aspects. So it's in vitro and then several other tests before it can get in vivo into the patient. And the 3D printing assists, for example, in analyzing specific drugs in cancer treatment to see if the drug will cause less side effects, how that can be used if the cancer will metastasize or further invade the body's other cells, and then also have a detrimental effect on the healthy cells that we do not would like to hear.
Prof, clearly these technological advancements are positive for the medical field.
Yes.
But as always, as I sometimes say, that the path to destruction is always overlaid with all sorts of very difficult things that happen. These are technologies that have been developed by human beings, and they can be manipulated by human beings. Mm-hmm. Are there any social, any ethical, any psychological pitfalls that you as clinicians, as medical people have identified with regards to these advances that we now call the fourth industrial revolution, particularly in medicine?
Thank you for that question. And indeed, yes, there are disadvantages and advantages towards this. And specifically that it is a rather new field where all these techniques I've mentioned are actually combined and assisting healthcare. So there is another implication that we should mention, and that is cost implication per se. And as I've mentioned previously, I am a fundamental or the basic medical scientist, and I did my PhD in biochemistry. So I am not allowed, I cannot comment on the practitioner side. But what I do know is that cost implications with new development and new techniques in the start, that are difficult and it is high. But as the development proceeds, then the costs will come down. So for example, there are tests there where breast cancer patients can be tested on a genetic level. And some of these costs may differ depending on the marker of the cancer that we're looking at. It may be a 1,500 rand, but it can also be more than that, up to 20,000 rand per test. And again, the specific marker is of importance.
Yeah.
Some of the markers, there is a BRCA1, there is a BRCA2 that might be tested, or the clinician may ask to test that as an idea of what the precision medicine may contain for the patient. But unfortunately, those two markers are not the only ones for breast cancer, since you get several types of breast cancer per se. Then in South Africa, if we have a rough look of cost implications, chemotherapy may also cost a lot.
Yeah.
And usually when I say in the fourth industrial revolution and precision medicine, the clinician will look in the end combining all techniques or combining type of therapies for the specific person or the patient. So it might be chemo, radiation, the artificial intelligence that I mentioned. And chemo may cost 25 to 140,000 rand. Radiation may also be 51, maybe to 112, depending on the number of cycles of radiation. And then there's also the reconstructive surgery that can have a huge cost implication. So we are knowledgeable of that.
So cost is a big factor, as you are putting it out there. Mm. You speak of precision medicine, and of course you spoke about nanotechnology and all of the AI that's connected to that. And I go back to the question of, because these are human-developed technologies, so, for example, peripheral to the medical sort of the precision interventions that you would need to make physiologically. There's also other administrative stuff that is on the side. For example, the management of inventory, for example, and all of those kinds of things. But all of this is done by human beings. In a perfect world, this would work perfectly. But sometimes people have nefarious motivations. They may expose very, very personal information. They may infuse into the systems, into the operating systems, information that is malicious. What is being done to prevent those kinds of things?
So you're quite right. Confidentiality of the patient and then also the ethics, those aspects are very important. You know, if I think from the University of Pretoria's perspective, we do have a very rigorous system of ethics committee. For example, technologies being used, research being used, we will have to submit a proper protocol with the scientific solidity to be incorporated together with if there's a questionnaire involved or if the patient, there must be exclusion and inclusion criteria being indicated. So we have steps to make sure that the ethics committee look at that and then they get feedback and they will say, please address a certain aspect because we have to keep in mind the patient per se. That is our ultimate goal, to help the patient. And then not the confidentiality must be kept into place and also all the ethical approvals around that.
I would imagine that the algorithms, the operating systems, the intelligence of this artificial intelligence is sometimes developed in certain parts of the world that may carry certain prejudices sometimes, certain assumptions about other parts of the world. So, for example, you may have an algorithm that is very Eurocentric in its approach of dealing with a particular disease. Is there any work to try and universalize even the assumptions made in the development of algorithms in artificial intelligence?
So I think the artificial intelligence, it goes together with a big data analysis. And several researchers have models or certain algorithms that they built where it specifies where the data that they receive from the diseases will then be categorized. So it will be, say, for example, if this is a breast cancer patient or pancreatic cancer, the person is young or maybe it's female, etc. And then from there on, it is possible then to look at the model. But according to my knowledge, all those aspects of big data analysis, they build in the categories that we can, the data that we can generate and analyze from that.
Just in terms of the collaboration of the University of Pretoria specifically, but just in general, what is the level of collaboration between scientists of your caliber in the world about issues that have to do with artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, the fourth industrial revolution, as it were?
So My perspective is that it's very important that we work together nationally, but also internationally. So research cannot be conducted in silos. And we are fortunate to have collaborators national, but also international. So a few examples, it would be then from France, the University of Grenoble, where we are working with drug development researchers there to help us to assess the possible drugs against cancer and the potential. Then we also have a collaboration with the University of Oxford and in Turkey and in Florida. And to come back to the type of collaboration within our university, we are fortunate to have Professor Mike Setege, and he's the head of nuclear medicine, and he is looking into theranostics as well, where he combines the therapy and the diagnostics to get a precision radiation dose for a patient to treat with lots of success. Then we also have recently established within the Faculty of Health Sciences the Cancer Research Institute, and the director of the institute is Professor Zodwa Dlamini. And the whole idea behind that is from the in vitro work or from the basic medical sciences to take all the collaborators through to patient care. And that is a newly established initiative. And then we also have people like Professor Mashidu, that you will interview later, and Professor Michael Pepper. And he is from the Institute of Cellular and Molecular Medicine, and he is doing stem cell research with also huge advantages and strides in the research. So it cannot be done alone. We need everybody.
Do we have inter-university nationally collaboration at that level?
Yes, we do. We have a collaboration with UCT, with KwaZulu-Natal, Stellenbosch, and I recently heard that the University of Bloemfontein, they're also starting a cancer research unit. And since that is the field that I am working in, I'm very thankful that these options are available. And also with WITS, they also have cancer research going on, and we lie haze so that we can make the best of the question, research question that we ask, because then everybody can provide and contribute their knowledge in the end to contribute to the national health.
In terms of our ranking, just generally internationally and perhaps even nationally, where does the University of Pretoria specifically rank? Mm-hmm. I don't know whether this is a fair question to ask an academic person, yes, such as yourself, mm-hmm, but where do we rank in terms of our ability to produce research, but also research that is not only just cerebral, but that is also practical? Where do we rank at that level?
So maybe I can go it from the other perspective to say that we have several researchers that they are A-rated via the National Research Foundation within the University of Pretoria. And then we have several exchange student programs as well, where our students have the opportunity and are invited to go to overseas university and bring back knowledge. And we have also professors visiting Pretoria again. So there is the whole time exchange of knowledge. So, and if we look at the outcomes and the research papers being published, they are in international accredited journals with good journal impact factors. And we can also refer to citations where other researchers globally refer to papers that have been written by authors in the University of Pretoria.
Prof, thank you very much. When we come back, we touch on the medical aspects of things and 3D surgical procedures.
You are listening to a World of Answers podcast.
The University of Pretoria can help you achieve your true potential. As a UP graduate, you're invited to join the university's prestigious alumni network. Download the new app, Alumni Network app, which is designed to help you expand your network, advance your career, and gain access to exclusive opportunities. You can also stay in touch with fellow alumni and be part of a community of change makers. Search for Graduate Community on Google Play or the App Store and let your degree take you further. University of Pretoria. Discover a world of answers. Visit up.co.za.
You are listening to a World of Answers podcast.
I'm joined now by Professor Mashudu Chifularu, Academic Head and Head of Department of the Ear, Nose and Throat Department at the Steve Biko Academic Hospital at the University of Pretoria. Professor Mashudu Chifularu, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
So we've been having conversations and we've been discussing the fourth industrial revolution as it pertains to the profession of medicine.
Yes.
In your opinion, what is the fourth industrial revolution and how should we as lay people understand its applicability in medicine?
The fourth industrial revolution is a revolution of information and internet of things and advances in technology. And it's affecting everything. Actually, I coin it that we are living in the fourth industrial. We are going towards the fifth industrial revolution. So, you know, in the medical field, it affects everything. It affects the genetic engineering, something that we call precision medicine, data science, and diagnostic and rehabilitation and treatment is completely affected by the fourth industrial revolution.
Yourself and your team at the University of Pretoria, particularly at the Steve Biko Academic Hospital, pioneered a surgical procedure which uses three printed middle ear bones for conductive hearing loss rehabilitation. Was that an application of the fourth industrial revolution in medicine?
Exactly. And I did not even realize, I hear people always say, myself and my team, actually it's just my PhD study. The other ones are just my young doctors. And I got into this technology as I'm researching and I said, I'm looking for solution. And when I discovered the 3D technology, that was almost 3 years ago, and it revolutionized everything that we're doing because the fourth industrial and the 3D helps you to come up with a tailor-made precision therapy for an individual, for a patient.
What did it actually entail and what was the desired result for this particular procedure for the patient that you were operating on?
The desired outcome was on my side, being working with this problem of middle ear conductive hearing loss for many years. And now I was asking myself, we're supposed to improve and get better with what we're doing. So for 10 years, I've been cracking my head, looking at this, trying to get the solution. So the idea was, why can't we reconstruct this middle ear bones and structure exactly as how they look like in the body, almost like, you know, with the orthopedics, knees and things. So for me, I was not even aware I'm in the fourth industrial. For me, I was just working and I said, this technology is exciting. So we wanted to make sure that we cover all the disadvantages of existing processes which were helping us with the middle ear to make sure it's tailor-made for patient, it fit well, it improved the hearing, it stabilized, it stays there, and it looked exactly like the bones that have been damaged, which is exactly what we did.
And in that particular procedure, were you able to restore the patient's hearing?
Definitely. We managed to restore the patient's hearing in the middle ear. And just a few weeks ago, I was with him. The man is excited, he's happy. So that's exactly what we wanted to do.
I had the conversation with Professor Joubert earlier on where we were talking about some of the ethical and perhaps even moral issues that come to play when you speak about the fourth industrial revolution.
Yes, yes.
In your experience, as you were thinking about these things, what are some of those that emerge in your mind that we should be thinking of and preparing ourselves as we delve deeper into the fourth industrial revolution as far as medicine is concerned?
There are a lot of ethical issues that are going to come out of this development in the technology. Many is going to be the ethics, it's going to be the governance, it's going to be the laws, it's going to be the training, it's going to be cost, and it's going to be accessibility. And the other thing is going to be jobs, because when you automate everything, it means that some people are going to be pushed from one job to another. As we speak now, Steve Biko, we have an automated pharmacy. I think we also have some few in the country. So which means that you don't need a pharmacist anymore. And in the medical field now all over the world, as I was doing the research, they are even having to use drones to deliver medicine, to deliver things like organ transplant, to make sure that place where it's not accessible. I mean, you know that even some of our primary health, first aid emergency people, when they go to some areas, they get attacked, they're at danger.
Yes.
So now if you just put a drone, it will deliver and, you know, you don't need a human body there.
But don't you then, and this is a question that I asked Professor Jube, and I'd be interested to hear what your thoughts are. The relationship between the practitioner, the human practitioner, and the patient is almost sacrosanct, because that is how the practitioner, the health practitioner, is able to judge over and above the symptoms that are presented by whatever disease the patient is suffering, that can go into understanding some of the psychological issues that that particular patient is undergoing, perhaps even issues of culture that a particular practitioner would understand. By removing the human being in this process, do we not somehow weaken that bond that exists between a practitioner and a patient, that personal human bond that exists?
We need human touch. This object, this are robotics, and the human touch will never go away. There will always need to be a human being somewhere on the line. But I think the critical thing that I'm foreseeing since I've been involved in the fourth industrial is that we need to train the professional, we need to train the community. And the community now, they're so informed. When they come to you, they've Googled everything. So they know. They just want the human to be able to, the human touch, to confirm and to make sure that what they are reading or what they are thinking is correct or not. So we can't do away with human being. We need human.
Yeah.
So we need the human touch.
Yeah. In all of this, I suppose it's great to have these technological advancements. They are created by human beings, but is there a possibility that human beings can, for example, invade the operating system of a computer system, for example, or plant a virus that would give the wrong information? What is being done about that kind of stuff? You know, it's the stuff of movies. Terminator comes to mind when I'm thinking about this.
I mean, there's a danger of cybersecurity as we speak. Because once you have such an advanced technological information, some of the studies now, you know, they can, the robots or robotics are more precise than doctors themselves,
indeed,
the human beings. So which means you can easily attack it and either put a virus like you're saying. And so even when we do robotic surgery, we don't totally completely rely. We still need a person to make sure, because in some of the operation, even now when I operate, there's somewhere we use almost like robotic system to tell you exactly where you are. Let's say you're operating in the close to the brain or close to the vital structure. But at the same time, if it is not properly said, is going to show you the wrong things. You have to know still to say, no, no, I don't agree with the machine.
So there cannot be an over-dependence on the precision of the technology.
No,
the human understanding of medicine still needs to play a very significant role.
Exactly.
So what is the fourth industrial revolution promising with regards to cancer? Cancer has been with us for a long time. It's been something that we've been wanting to get rid of for the longest of time, but it's still here. What is the fourth industrial revolution, the advances in technology, promising in as far as the, I suppose, the diminishing and maybe even the eradication of cancer?
Wow. I mean, fourth industrial revolution is the best thing that has ever happened for cancer therapy. Because now we reach a stage where you'll come to the clinic just by just taking a smear on your tongue. We can tell you what kind of medication you need. So the studies are being done all over to prove that genetical makeup, genetic editing, and we can tell you that this person with this genetic makeup, this is the treatment that you need. So for cancer and diagnosis, some guys, they've done a very fantastic study in China. So they compare that when a doctor look at a skin cancer, and when the computer interprets a skin cancer, it's more advanced than human eye. So the fourth industrial for cancer is the best thing, because now it can tell us that
are we looking at the possible eradication of cancer in the near future?
That's what we're trying, because prevention is better than cure. So it's going to improve the screening to start with. And after you've done the screening, so it's going to make diagnosis early. And then from there, when you finish, even now we still use, even some, Steve, because we have sort of like what we call tailor-made, like breast cancer. I mean, for breast cancer, it's easy. You know that when the woman comes, you screen the gene makeup, then you know the person with this gene, this is the treatment that they need. The person with this genetic makeup, this is the treatment that will work. So fourth industrial for cancer is the best thing that has ever happened.
Prof, I want to thank you very much for joining us and just letting us know as to what advances are being made specifically in the ear, nose and throat area, but generally in the medical profession with regards to the fourth industrial revolution. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks. I would always say watch this space.
This podcast was brought to you by the University of Pretoria, a world of answers.